I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to History Dweebs. I'm Nina Instead. You may know me from my podcast, Already Gone. With Timmy out adventuring in Europe, I stepped in to co-host the show this week.
You came in to try to hurt us together. You've done live shows with us before, haven't you?
I have.
Yeah, so we have now, you've done two live shows. This will be our third classy show.
Oh, good Lord.
Well.
You're such a kiss ass.
Classy's relative.
Well, we're calling today's show the Colonel's Three-Way.
No, we're not calling it that at all.
Oh, dear God.
Ever.
That's what other people would be calling.
Nobody's going to call it that. But anyway, go ahead.
Kim said something about tag teaming, but I didn't get into that.
Yeah, that was part of the deal, I thought. It was.
No.
I don't get much out of this show, but every once in a while, Timmy throws me a bone.
Nope.
No. He does.
OMG.
So you do two podcasts, I know, the one long form, and you have a second one long form coming up.
I have a second season of Don't Talk to Strangers coming out in December.
Cool. We'll have to
look
for
it. More dead kids. More dead kids. It's what everybody wants to hear about.
Well, we have, Chuck and I have decided, unanimously, that we will no longer be doing dead kids on this show, and we're going to revolt against Timmy if he tries to give us that script again, because we don't like it.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah, last week, the San Ysidro shooting, it's hard to be funny when you're doing shows like
don't
that.
Like it.
People just go in for a quarter pounder and...
Nope. We'll leave those kinds of shows to you, my love. Hey, I'm a giver.
Oh, thanks.
Giver.
I appreciate that. No. Very generous.
I would like to let people know that this is a true crime / comedy podcast. And as such, occasionally we touch on dark themes and... Well, having the devil on the show, there's a lot of foul language. So if that offends you, if it offends somebody, what would you advise them to do, Miss Nina?
They can fuck right off.
Yes, they can.
See, that just made the show. That just made the show. That was made it for me.
Of course it did. All right, what are we doing today?
So,
well, we are talking about old Hollywood, which honestly, you may not know this, and I don't think Timmy knew this when he selected this topic. I love old Hollywood stuff.
Oh, cool.
Like, if I didn't do a true crime podcast, I would tell stories of old Hollywood, because I just think it's super cool.
Cool.
I heard Milton Berle had a giant...
Oh, my God.
Monster thing
Uncle
there.
Milty.
Yeah.
There was a quote about him when he said, well, yeah, come on, show us. And he said, I'm just going to pull out enough to win.
Gross. Why would you ever want to look at Milton Berle's wiener? Ever.
Well, as long as you look from the neck down, I suppose.
Oh, my God.
But I guess if you look like that, you got to offer something.
That's fair.
Who's next?
God
Don
doesn't
Knotts?
Give with both hands, devil. You know, I bet Barney Fife was hung like a mule.
Oh, my God.
So I have slept in his bed, in Barney Fife's bed.
Have you now?
Was there an imprint? There an imprint? Big old wiener imprint on the bed?
There was no peen print, no.
Nice.
No, but a family friend, her dad grew up with him. Like, they grew up together in West Virginia, and when I stayed at their house, I slept in the room that he always slept in. So, yeah, Barney Fife's
bed. Nice. Weird, but nice. Yeah. Weird. All right, so who are we talking about?
Don Knotts. That
yes.
Was well, today we are talking about Jean Harlow. She was the first blonde bombshell.
I love Jean Harlow. She's not, no, that's not. Who am I thinking of that was Mommy Dearest?
Joan Crawford.
There we go. Okay, thank you. It wasn't clicking for me at all. It's early.
You would love Mommy Dearest. I can see that.
She's the reason I don't buy wire hangers.
That reminded me of my childhood
much. No, it does
not. Same.
All right. So let's talk about Jean Harlow.
So Jean Harlow was one of Hollywood's biggest stars, but her life off the set was anything but glamorous. She was pressured to succeed by her overzealous stage mom, and Jean continued to maintain an unrelenting production schedule despite her failing health.
I feel like I would be a stage mom if my kids had talent or anything like that.
I don't think her mom cared if she had talent, and we're gonna get to that. Her mom was a piece of work.
I would totally be a
stage mom. I heard Marilyn Monroe. I heard Marilyn Monroe had poor hygiene.
Okay.
No, they said Marilyn Monroe sometimes would go 4, 5, 6 days without a bath.
I don't know.
That's,
ew.
America's one of the only places I think that everybody showers every day, like it's a thing. We're weird Is about it? That kind of stuff. Yeah, but that's what I heard. I don't know that that's true.
Now, see, I don't wash my hair every day.
Well, you don't have that much to wash.
I shower every day, but I don't. Nice.
Well,
I don't wash my hair every day because I try to keep some body in it, you know.
And there's three little strands that
you wash
over
it every day. It dries it out. It's bad for your scalp.
You need to use baby shampoo. Like, gives you some Johnson's.
I do use
Johnson's.
Baby shampoo. I get
Johnson's.
You the one that needs some Johnson & Johnson. Maybe if you got some Johnson, you'd be in a little bit better mood. Wouldn't be all cranky here on a Sunday morning.
That's not even true. I would totally be in a cranky mood all of the time. So there you go. And don't be mad at me just because your hair's running away from your face.
My hair's just fine.
Mm-hmm.
I got a cut yesterday. The lady was running her fingers through it saying how thick and luxurious it was.
No, she wasn't.
You were paying her.
And she's not a hairdresser. No. So
no, she's not actually. But
so, I mean, you know, you got that going for you. But anyway,
it was $4.
I bet it was. I bet it. You paid $4 for a haircut.
I don't even want to know what he got for $4.
God, even if it was a haircut, Jesus Christ, for $4. That just shows how much hair you have.
I would cut his hair for $4.
Just shows how much hair he
well,
has.
You know, this reminds me of just not to get off the subject here, but.
Sure.
I had to go to court in Butler County one time, and I was approached in the parking lot by a young lady who was offering some services for $10.
Damn, Butler County, that's mm-hmm. cheap.
Well, and.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, well, no, and then Except I said, you know, I'm not really interested. And then she dropped herself down to $5. And I said, no, you know, I'm kind of running behind. I got a little things to do. I was trying to be polite, you know. And then she dropped herself down to $3. Okay, now $3. Think that through. Now, if this woman would have come up to me and said, "Sir, for $50, I will change your life. I will give you an experience you have never dreamed of in your whole life." You know, of course, in the front seat of your car, because, yeah. But whatever.
What?
Had she said that, that may have intrigued me and piqued my interest a little bit. I'm not saying I would have given somebody $50, no.
She's a daytime hooker. I don't know what you're expecting. Daytime hookers.
In the parking lot of a
courthouse. Yeah, daytime hookers are not great.
I'm just saying, when you talk yourself down to $3, you start to think, no. What? No.
Was it?
I don't want.
Was she having a Black Friday sale?
Well, it's like, you know, somebody selling steak out of a truck for, you know, 49 cents a pound. You just know it's not something you want a part of. That's all.
It's nothing.
Maybe that's how they got rid of Jimmy
Hoffa. Nothing you want to put in your mouth.
Hey, did you see The Irishman yet?
I have not.
Oh, you have to see it.
I heard about it.
I understand I need a couple of days.
It's
being
like
from Detroit,
long.
You have to see it. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's very good, though.
I don't have that kind of time.
All right.
That's the first time Al Pacino's ever done a Martin Scorsese movie.
Really?
Think about that. Really? What do you think about that, Brandy?
Is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Huh. I don't care, but yeah, I'll probably watch it.
And although they have done movies together, see, I am just a font of knowledge over
useless
here.
Useless knowledge, but okay.
Although they have done movies together, it is the first time that Pacino and De Niro have appeared on screen at the same time.
That's amazing.
Yeah, because they were in Heat, but they were sitting opposite each other. So you saw one or you saw the other. You didn't see them together, I don't think.
Right. No, they were never in the same scene at the same time. And they were in Godfather Part 2.
Yeah, they were.
No, but in Heat, they had a conversation.
What's that?
In the movie Heat, their characters had a conversation.
Yes, they did. But they were not on the screen in the scene at the same time.
Speaking of movies that are an hour or two long.
Yes.
Good movie, mind you. Heat was a good movie. It was just long.
You know.
It was a good movie.
I find in the age of Netflix, and I'm terrible about this, is that I will sit down and, you know, like this Irishman or whatever. Like, I know I need to watch it, but it's like 3 hours. Oh my God, that's so long. But I will sit down and watch like 4 or 5 hour long episodes of a docuseries with no problems.
Well, because you have options.
That's
when
what I
think.
When
one episode ends, you have the option to be like, yeet, out of here. But when you're watching a movie, you're like, oh, do I stop now?
See, it's very stressful. So it's like The Irishman. I feel like I have to carve out my day to watch it.
Yeah, and if I have to carve out 3 hours, I don't know if watching a Scorsese movie is what I want to do with that 3 hours.
Exactly.
Oh, I can think of nothing else I'd rather be doing than watching a Scorsese movie for 3 hours.
For 3 hours, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Avengers, the last Avengers just about did me in for long movies.
Do you know what I found myself doing yesterday, Devil?
No. What?
And I'm ashamed to admit this.
But here
I had to go to my niece Dee's house for a family gathering. And I'm walking back and forth through the house is a Hallmark movie. The Christmas Cabin is on TV.
You sat and watched it, didn't you? The whole fucking thing.
I did not sit and watch it. I did not sit and watch it. But we were leaving right as it ended. And when I got home, I was like, I got to see how this movie ends.
Oh, God.
So I got on Amazon and said, buy me Christmas Carol. Christmas Cabin, whatever it was. And it was, these two people got stuck in a cabin for a snowstorm or something. And they, you know, it's the thing. They don't like each other at first.
Right. And then they fall
but
in love.
After a week. Yeah. But don't you think even after the second day you'd be doing it? I mean, what are you going to do? You got no internet up there. You got no.
It's a Hallmark movie.
Netflix. You got nothing.
Yeah, it's a Hallmark movie. They're not doing it.
No. They don't show any boobs in Hallmark.
You're
movies.
Right.
Did you know that?
You're right. I mean, that's just an astute observation by you. And all
Scratch
Hallmark
them
movies,
off the list.
All Hallmark movies are the same. they're all the same.
Yeah.
My mother will watch them till her eyes bleed. And I'm like, why? I can tell you what's going to happen. She just.
But it's so romantic.
Yes. And I suppose when you have very little romance in your life, that's what you do after you've been married for 100 years.
So speaking of romance, the subject of today's episode was married 3 times.
Yeah, she was a sucker for love. Tell me more about her early life, Nina.
Jean Harlow was born Harlene Harlow Carpenter on March 3, 1911, in Kansas City, Missouri. Her father, Montclair Carpenter, was a local dentist.
He sounds fancy.
And her... Doesn't he, Montclair?
Yes, he sounds fancy.
Isn't that a pen?
I think so, something like that.
No, that's Mont Blanc. Yeah. Anyway, Jean's mother was Jean Poe Harlow. And honestly, between Montclair and Jean Poe Harlow... I can't with the names.
Well, Harlene Harlow. What?
Harlene Harlow.
Yeah.
So her mother was forced to marry Montclair as part of an arranged marriage orchestrated by her father, Jean's grandfather, Skip Harlow.
Skippy.
See, now, Skip Harlow, they were skiers, the Harlow family was.
Were they?
And, now Jean had a sister, Eileen, that they didn't talk much about, and she... She mangled up a leg real bad in a skiing accident.
Of course she did.
And then they had Uncle Skip.
Yeah.
Who mangled up himself in a ski accident real bad.
I see. So, that's
a little bit of Harlow trivia
that is not
I'm
true
just
at all.
Adding in here.
But go ahead.
So Jean Poe Harlow was only 14 at the time of the marriage, which.
Right.
And. She came to resent her new husband, which is just shocking, frankly, that a 14-year-old forced to marry a dentist resents
him. Well, she should resent her dad.
But she loved their daughter. Yeah, but that's different. That's different.
But even if, don't you feel like even if she got married at 21 or 30 or 40, at some point she was going to come to resent her husband?
Yes.
I mean, that's just,
that's totally fair.
It's kind of natural course of things.
Yes.
That's a natural arc of a marriage.
Resentment and then just acceptance and resignation. Yes.
Resignation.
Resignation, yeah.
That's nice. Put that in your book.
It's in there.
I'm sure.
It's in the last chapter.
I'm sure. All right.
It's in the hallway sex chapter, devil.
Perfect.
Well, you know, there's phases. I try to tell people there's phases. You know, you first get married and you're having sex all over, right? Just all over the house. You have it all over.
Okay.
And then after you've been married a few years, it kind of, you know, just it's always in the bedroom. And then after you've been married longer than that, it just moves to the hallway where you just say fuck you to each other as you pass each other in the hallway. See, that's hallway sex, devil.
I see.
That's the whole arc of a sex life in a long-term marriage.
I see.
It's in the book.
I will make sure that I look for it. Weirdo. God.
What's the craziest place you ever did it in your house, devil?
In my house?
In your house.
I don't know. I mean, you know, the house only has so many rooms. So,
have you hit them all?
Yeah.
You got one you got to check off the list?
Yeah, the bathroom.
Closets.
The bathroom. I'm not good with that.
Yeah, see, I have that in the book, too. And this is some advice for you, Ms. Nina.
Yes.
You hear a lot about shower sex.
Nina's left.
Stay away from it. Stay away. Avoid it at all costs, Nina.
Look, the bathroom is for gross stuff. So I don't think that, you know, doing it in there is sexy.
Well, no, I'm talking about the shower. You get in there and the water's all nice and it's like blah, blah, blah. Next thing you know, somebody's got a bleeding head injury. And it happens far too often.
Back.
Or they throw out their back. You know, or you rip a towel bar off the wall.
Or
it's
slip.
Just no good comes from
it.
Yeah.
It doesn't. All right.
The more you know.
The more you know.
Yes.
Perfect.
So 14-year-old Jean came to resent the husband, but they loved their daughter, Harlene, and they nicknamed her the baby. Ugh. And they called her that for the remainder of her life. Like, everybody called her the baby. And when Harlene was very young, her mother started entering her in pretty baby contests. And she had her in acting classes by the time she was 5.
Yeah, see, I think I could do that whole toddlers and tiaras thing. That would be me as a stage mom. I would be friggin' crazy. But go ahead. I know.
So while Harlene was a lovely little girl, she was often sick. And when she was 5 years old, not long after she started acting classes, she came down with meningitis, which nearly killed her. She was never a particularly healthy person. And bringing up the meningitis, let's just take a moment to reflect. It is Thanksgiving weekend. With some gratitude. Is someone's cat throwing up?
No, that's my child. Chuck, you're going to have to take that out.
Yeah, I usually edit out the Doc Holliday sounds when he gets sick there.
He's had all his medicine. Love his heart. He's just kind of, I know. No, not a cat throwing up. Just my baby.
Okay. You never know. In my house, it could be a cat throwing up, so it's 50-50. All right. But this is important. I want to take a moment to reflect. It is Thanksgiving weekend, and I am so fucking thankful for antibiotics.
Oh. Oh.
Which were not a thing until the late 40s.
So is Timmy.
Oh, I bet Timmy is. Jesus, the clap ain't going to cure itself.
Exactly.
Slam that thing in a window. Were you ill over Thanksgiving?
No. She had meningitis, and now they can give you antibiotics or other medications
to
help resolve it. But people would die. You know, people still die from it, but it'll make more sense in a minute when we get to her next illness. So Harlene's mother was very protective. She coddled her. And she created this really weird dynamic in their relationship where Harlene felt that she owed everything to her mother.
Ugh.
And like very, yeah, codependent and gross. Mama Jean would later say, quote, "She was always all mine." And the two of them remained close even as Harlene grew into adulthood.
I feel like this is kind of a Norman Bates kind of relationship.
So what you're saying to me is feeling like you owe everything to your mother is not a healthy thing.
I think there's
healthy and then there's gross.
Creepy. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this was not a healthy... I have such a great relationship with my mom where, you know, I owe everything to her. This is
dependency.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. See, because I come from an Irish family. And, I mean, our moms are all saints.
Well, she is now because she's dead.
Yeah.
Well, and yeah, she is hopefully going to be.
There.
She always does. She always reminds me my mama, God rest her soul, has moved to the. Moved on to be with whoever.
Right.
From the stories you've told me, she's moved on to be with Mussolini, Stalin.
those
people.
Yeah, she's probably having a good old time with them, but I don't know where she moved on to.
But she has moved on. She's crossed the
plane.
But
she has moved on. She's into that great ether out there.
This is really more of a, this just reminds me really of a, just a Norman Bates kind of relationship with the mother. Like this just codependency and adoration and blech.
Yeah.
No.
A little idolatry.
Yes.
Yeah. Her mom is interesting. We'll say that. So when Jean is 10, she's over the meningitis. Her mom puts her in Miss Barstow's finishing school for girls in Kansas City. And while Jean is off at finishing school, when she's 10, her mother files for divorce and seeks full custody of Jean. And she gets her divorce and full custody on September 29th, 1992.
22.
No.
92 would have been amazing.
Yeah.
Right? That was only, yeah. So.
They don't have finishing schools anymore, do they?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
No, but I don't
I feel like you.
I could have used one.
I don't know why you would go to finishing school as a 10-year-old.
Right, that's weird.
Yeah,
well, you could use a little touch up now, Devil. You could use a little polish and a little work. I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, you know what? What you can talk to me about it tomorrow when I see you at work. Before I smack the dog shit out of you, we can talk about
at the diversity and cultural sensitivity training.
Exactly.
You're going to.
Exactly. I'm going to bring this up. I'm absolutely going to bring this up.
I think I might ask that.
At our sensitivity.
If all the ladies here would have gone to finishing school, we would only need the men here.
You should definitely do that. Definitely do that. Perfect. All right. Carry on.
So, despite the divorce, Jean idolized her father, Montclair Harlow. But her mother would have not, you know, she didn't like that. So Mom saw to it that Jean and her father had very little contact.
Yeah, that's a control issue.
And I know you'll be shocked to hear this, but Jean's mother, well, Jean Poe, Harlene's mother, she wanted to be a famous actress.
Oh, projecting.
Oh, living vicariously.
So in 1923, Jean Carpenter is a newly divorced 34-year-old woman. And she packs up her daughter and moves to Hollywood. And Jean has decided that she is going to be a movie star.
Well, duh.
Yeah, she sounds perfectly sane and rational. But Mama Jean is told that she is too old to begin a film career.
At 34? 34.
Yep, all dried up. Yeah, not happening.
Well, this is before the internet, because now 34-year-old women have plenty of roles on
star potential.
Star potential, yes.
So Harlene is enrolled at the Hollywood School for Girls, and while she's there, she meets Douglas Fairbanks.
Oh, that's a big star.
He was a big star. If you don't know who Douglas Fairbanks is, he went on to found United Artists, which is still in existence to today. So it's 1925, and at the age of 14, Harlene drops out of school. Meanwhile, her grandfather, Skip, who is Jean's dad, threatens that unless Mama Jean brings herself and Harlene back to Kansas City, he's disowning them and removing them from the will.
Yeah.
And apparently, I mean, that makes sense. That's not controlling or manipulative or weird at all. So Mama Jean gives in, and they move back to Kansas City. And several weeks later, Skip sends Harlene to summer camp, Camp Chautauqua, in Mishagami, Michigan.
You ever been there?
No, I'm not familiar with it.
I've been there.
Of course you have.
I haven't been to that camp, but I've been to Mishagami, Michigan.
I haven't been to Mishagami either. I'm not even sure where it is.
Well, I'm a world traveler. I'm a man about town.
Duh. She's got scarlet fever. Well.
She does. And you know what? I had scarlet fever, and that shit is weird.
It is.
My face turned blue. I had little spots all over me.
Don't you hallucinate or something weird when you have scarlet fever?
I don't think I hallucinated, but my mom was all excited because she said, oh my God, scarlet fever. It used to wipe out villages in the medieval times. So she thought it was great. And the doctor had never actually seen a case of it before. And I was at this pediatric practice and they brought in everybody to look at me because I was such a classic
oddity.
Case of scarlet fever. Yeah.
How old were you at the time?
I was 8.
Did you get it after a case of strep throat? Do you remember?
I believe that's what happened. That because I was prone to strep throat as a kid, and I think that I just hit. It's scarlet fever is supposedly untreated strep throat.
I had a. It's very serious. I had a friend that had to. She got strep throat as an adult and got scarlet fever, and had to have a heart valve replaced because scarlet fever can affect your heart if you let it go too long.
Yes, but. But Nina's mom.
The more you know.
Nina's mom didn't do that. She got her treated.
She did not. She got her treated.
Even if she was a circus
freak. Thank God for antibiotics.
For a minute.
I was.
Do you have any pictures from back then?
What? Not of me with scarlet fever, you big weirdo.
Well, I'm just saying it'd be interesting for people to see that you, because I think people have this thing, you know, this preconceived notion that you're perfect. So I think they should see you, you know, as a little flawed.
What is wrong with you?
I'm just saying.
Honestly.
Couldn't hurt.
You know.
Scarlet fever. If I had scarlet fever, I'd have pictures of myself posted all over the internet.
Well, they didn't have the internet when I had scarlet fever.
Well, you can scan the pictures. Every time I get a rash or something, I put it on the internet.
We know.
But I'm usually saying, hey, has anybody ever had something like this before?
And Timmy tells you that it's
penicillin. It's time to get penicillin, yeah.
No, we always convince him it's something weird. It's good times.
Yeah, every time I have something weird with me, they tell me, yeah, my aunt had that. It was cancer. She died.
Well, no, it's...
Well, that's uplifting.
Or sometimes we're like, oh, you've got yellow fever. Or, you know, dengue fever or whatever it's called. I mean, just sends him into a lather. And then he spends the rest of the afternoon on WebMD trying to figure out what it is. It's fun.
I have cured myself of all those ailments.
You know, here's the thing. You got to take the little joys that it gives you. And
it's
that
true.
Is one of those joys. Timmy's easier, though.
Timmy is easier.
Timmy's easier. All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead. So she's at summer camp.
That's okay.
Camp Titicaca, yep. Or whatever.
Right. In Michigan. Yeah. And her mother goes to Michigan to take care of her daughter and rows across the lake. It's a boat and rows across the lake to the camp. But she is turned away.
Can you just see her, like, rowing for everything she's got, trying to get over there?
And you know she's got one of those poofy dresses on.
Oh, God, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She's just not having
it. And gloves and a hat.
Yeah, pearls, everything else, and just trying not to break a sweat as she does the rowing.
That was an amazing visual for me. Thanks. Go ahead.
So Harlene did recover from the illness, and when she is 17, her mother sends her to the Ferry Hall School in Lake Forest, Illinois. And Jean Carpenter picked this school because it was close to Jean's boyfriend, Marino Bello, who'll become a really shitty stepfather to Harlene eventually, because Jean and Marino will eventually marry. But Jean wanted to see Marino, so she enrolled Harlene at this school. And while Harlene is in school, she's a freshman, she's paired with a big sister from the senior class who introduces her to 19-year-old Charles Chuck Fremont McGrew.
All right.
Chuck McGrew. That's a pretty cool name.
McGrew.
Chuck McGrew. Sounds like a rodeo clown more than a rodeo cowboy.
Sounds like a crime
Chuck
dog.
Chuck McGrew.
Sounds like a crime dog.
take a bite out of Chuck McGrew. It was McGrew.
I know.
So in 1926, Harlene and Chuck, who happened to be the heir to a large fortune, they're dating very seriously, and they get married in 1927. And that same year, Jean Carpenter, Harlene's mother, marries Marino Bello. But Harlene, who is still resentful of her mother leaving her dad many years ago, does not go to mom's wedding.
Yeah.
Some family strife there.
In 1928, the young newlyweds left Chicago and moved to Beverly Hills. And Chuck McGrew turned 21 2 months after the marriage. And when he turned 21, he received a portion of his large inheritance.
Nice.
The couple... I can't imagine giving a large inheritance.
Hold on. He turned 21. She's got to be...
17?
Yeah, 17. Okay.
Yeah, give or take. 17.
Yeah, she's getting up there now, so she's all right.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah. So they moved to a house in Beverly Hills where Harlene thrived as a wealthy socialite. McGrew wanted to distance her from her mother with this move to California. But once they move, they've got all of Chuck's money. They're in this big, pretty house. But Chuck and Harlene, they're not working, and they both start drinking a lot. Because what else?
Sweet.
What else? Right. Yeah, what else is there to do?
It's part of throwing a party.
You know, Chuck, I think if they'd had your book, they might have had less to drink.
Well, yeah, a couple drinks beforehand doesn't hurt.
I don't think that's true. I think people with this book will drink heavily to blackout stage, perhaps.
Some of the things in the book, you really need to be close to a blackout stage to say, this sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. I think reading the book, you need to be toward the blackout stage to say,
Sounds
like a good idea. What?
I have not read this script, but what I'm picturing next.
No.
Is Mama Harlow climbing a wrought iron gate in a driveway?
She rode across a lake.
You're not far off.
I know. They thought they could escape her. This is a woman who will jump in a canoe.
That's right.
And come across a lake after you.
Yeah.
She's like Michael Myers. She's like the Michael Myers of mothers. He can't put it down.
So you're not far off because they were in California living their Beverly Hills lifestyle without any sign of Harlene's mom. But of course, Jean and her husband Marino move to California, and they don't just move to California. They buy the house across the street from where Harlene and Chuck are living. Ugh.
Oh, there you go.
Again, healthy, normal choices. No red flags
Cock
here.
Block. Go ahead.
So, once Mama Jean is there, she's encouraging Harlene to pursue an acting career. And Harlene was not interested. She was young. She was happy. She was in love.
She was drunk.
Money.
She was drunk
probably every day. What she really wanted was to start a family. She wanted to have kids and have this great life with Chuck. But her mom, again, super healthy choices, begs her not to have children because it will ruin her body for the cameras.
She's not wrong.
Well, ruin a body. See, didn't... How's it going to ruin a body? They didn't do...
They went in high def.
Okay.
Because...
Well, I mean...
The camera
they
adds
had
10
corsets.
Pounds.
I mean... you can... They had girdles back
of
then.
Of course, it's not a miracle worker. What the fuck?
The men wore girdles back then.
Yeah, and look at Fatty Arbuckle. I don't care what you put on him. He was still kind of a chunky man.
Well...
Earned the nickname.
That was part of his charm.
Well, I understand, but, you know, she didn't want her... She didn't want her to have a child that might put 10 extra pounds or widen her hips.
Right, because who cares what Harlene wants for her own happiness and well-being?
Duh.
Right?
If our children would just listen to us, then they wouldn't have half the strife that they have. I'm just saying.
Is that really a thing that your hips get wider after you have kids?
Well, they spread out when you're pregnant. And sometimes...
Yeah.
And sometimes they go back, and sometimes they do not.
See, I got these, I do a lot of woodworking in here, and I got, you know, these wood clamps.
What?
It just seems like they could get big clamps and tighten your hips back up if you wanted to.
Oh, that's so dumb.
Like a wood girdle.
Right. That's... Yeah, just clamp it on there, leave it on there overnight, and take it off in the morning.
Yeah,
you're good to go.
That's kind of...
It doesn't sound that different from that crazy waist training bullshit that everybody was doing.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, no. They're still doing it. People still do that. Why would you do that? I don't know why. It's like the old Chinese tradition of binding your feet. Why would you do something like that?
Because the Kardashians said to.
Oh, well,
that's why.
That's reason enough for me, I guess.
Well, but, I mean, that's what people do.
So,
they have more money than sex.
We're in L.A.
Yes.
That's true. We're in L.A., and Harlene becomes friends with a young, aspiring actress named Rosalie Roy. And Rosalie did not have a car, so she occasionally asked Harlene for rides. And one day she asked if Harlene would drive her to Fox Studios for an appointment. And Harlene agreed, and while she was there, she was noticed and approached by Fox executives while waiting for Rosalie to finish her appointment. And when they asked her about acting or doing a screen test, Harlene said, "I am not interested." But she was given letters of introduction to the Central Casting Office. And Harlene, again, sounds like a totally healthy, normal relationship, bets Rosalie bets Harlene that she does not have the nerve to go in an audition. And Harlene, again, healthy choices, good boundaries, she doesn't want to lose the bet. And her mother is there going, do it, do it, do it. So Harlene goes to Central Casting and signs in using her mother's maiden name of Jean Harlow. And little does Harlene know that for the rest of her life, she will be known to the world by her mother's maiden name.
See, and this isn't like being a little brother and having a big brother who says, oh, if you won't do this, you're a big chicken. This is your mama you're talking about. She's supposed to be looking out for you. Big brother, he's supposed to be tormenting you, but man.
Yeah, her mom was amazing. Central Casting called Harlene and offered her several jobs, and Harlene was like, no, not interested. No, not interested. Well, her mother really pushed her, so Harlene accepted position with them, and her first film was Honor Bound, which was released in 1928. Harlene worked as an unbilled extra and made $7 a day.
That's big money. That's about what me and you make, ain't it, Devil? $7 a day?
I think it's a little,
a little bit more.
A little more.
Yeah.
So Harlene liked the work. She'd never really worked before. She liked it. She continued taking small parts in film. Her roles became more and more prominent. But the new career was having a devastating effect on her marriage. Chuck wanted her home with him to keep him company. But Harlene liked Hollywood, and she liked working. This was a much-needed taste of freedom. But sadly, the more she worked, the more Chuck drank, and the couple split up in 1929. After the divorce, Jean moved in with her mother and her husband.
Well, and all that acting will cut into your drinking time.
Oh, yeah.
For some people. Not Nicolas Cage, no. But for some people.
Not Nicolas Cage, because that's just about what we're talking about. Jesus God. All right. So her mom now became her unofficial manager, and she negotiated with the studios to get the best parts for her. It was clear to everyone that Mama Jean was living vicariously through the eyes of her daughter. In 1929, Jean's big break came with her role in Hell's Angels. Billionaire Howard Hughes signed Jean to a 5-year, $100 per week contract on October 24th, 1929.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at UH1.com.
$100 a week in 1929?
Still more than what we make now.
Yeah, well, $100 a week, yeah.
Yeah. Hell's Angels premiered in Hollywood on May 27th, 1930 at Grauman's Chinese Theater, becoming the highest grossing film of 1930.
Although, you know what? That would be like $1,500 a week in our dollars, though.
I'm actually looking it up.
$1,500, $1,504.95.
Yes, you're faster than I am, damn it.
That's what his wife says, too.
I'm kind of like the Rain Man when it comes to math, Nina.
You're kind of like Rain Man?
Yeah.
You could have stopped that sentence, yeah. Yeah. So, Hell's Angels had made Jean Harlow an international star, but her problems were just beginning. In 1931, Howard Hughes loaned her contract to MGM, and this marked the beginning of her stardom. Her appearance in Platinum Blonde gave her the image of the sex idol of Hollywood. In 1932, Paul Byrne, the MGM executive, became impressed with her and arranged to buy her contract with Hughes. She exceeded the expectations of MGM by her performance in Red Dust. In 1933, she made her appearance in Dinner at Eight, the all-time star movie of MGM. She enlivened the film with her comic brilliance.
She was actually, have you seen her in movies?
No.
Yeah.
She was actually a pretty good actress. She was quite beautiful. She was a very beautiful woman, yeah. But she was quite a good actress.
Well,
she was the Meryl Streep of her time, really.
Was she? Settle down.
I don't think that.
Well, she had, you know, big boobs.
Okay. Her next film.
That's how you rate actresses for the most part.
You should go work for Mr. Skin. That I feel like is your calling. That's what you should do.
I feel like you guys have a different view on actors' talent, but that's an important part back in the 30s. How you looked in the
visual appeal.
Yeah.
Visual appeal, yeah.
Yeah. Her next film, Bombshell, was a Hollywood parody that resembled her real life experience. She aptly expressed her own personal experience under the control of a greedy stepfather and a dominant and persuasive mother. Although her career was at its zenith, Jean's personal life was in shambles. She had affairs with different...
I feel you there, Jean.
She had affairs with different power brokers in Hollywood, but had difficulty finding real love. She got married for the second time with producer Paul Byrne in 1932. If you remember, he was the one that was instrumental in winning the contract for MGM. Jean and Paul had been dating for months, but had a very turbulent and some say violent relationship. After returning from her honeymoon, Jean began working on her new movie, Red Dust, which co-starred Clark Gable. While on the set, Jean received a call that there was an emergency at her estate and to return home right away. When she arrived, she saw her husband lying on the bedroom floor in a puddle of blood. Yeah. Paul Byrne had shot himself in the head while standing in front of the mirror.
As one does. Right? You stand in front of a mirror. Yeah, sure.
Their butler discovered him and called MGM instead of the police, because that's a thing that you do. So there were tons.
Oh, that was totally normal back then.
Well, it's weird. So there were tons of rumors that it wasn't actually suicide. Many actually suspected Byrne's ex-girlfriend. A suspicion that was exacerbated by her jumping off a boat a couple of days later, also dying by suicide.
But the butler found him and nobody suspected the butler.
Butler did it.
Yeah. Butler always does it almost. Yeah.
They do. Except for, you know, Albert from Batman. He never does it. He's always a good guy.
No. Well, and Jean was only married to Paul Byrne for like, they got married like in July and he was dead by September.
I was gonna say, they
were not married very long.
Yeah.
No, just a hot minute.
So, yeah, it was long enough to get that money. After Paul Byrne's death, Jean began an indiscreet affair with boxer Max Bear, who, though separated from his wife Dorothy Dunbar, was threatened with divorce proceedings, naming Jean as a co-respondent for alienation of affection.
Can you really blame somebody else for alienation of affection? Because that usually happens before the affair.
Yeah. But
that was a popular one, though, back then. Yeah. They would use alienation of affection.
Yeah, that was back before the no-fault divorces.
Right.
Do any states have fault divorces anymore?
Yeah.
Do they?
I'm sure they do. All right, let's see. After Byrne's mysterious death, the studio did not want another scandal and defused the situation. There we go. By arranging a marriage between Jean and cinematographer Harold Rawson. Rawson and Harlow were friends, and Rawson just kind of went along with the plan. Which, you know, healthy. They quietly divorced 8 months later.
Good choice. Yeah. So I want to interject that Rawson ended up living until he was in his early 90s. He died in, I want to say, like 1988. He was born in 1895. Hmm? So he never married again.
Never?
After, no. Ever. He was about 40 when he married Jean Harlow, and then he never married again.
Well, she was, you know, she was kind of a big deal.
Sure.
Well, he might not have, back in those days, a lot of the studio people got married, but they didn't like, you know, the men didn't necessarily, weren't attracted to women. So they would get married to someone like Jean Harlow, who didn't really want to be married either, but they would have a husband and wife.
Maybe he was gay.
But it does sound like, I don't know if he was gay, but they were good friends. And I think that it was an amicable, like they were okay with getting married to each other. They were okay with it being a career convenience thing.
Yeah. I just want to say, did they consummate the marriage is what I'm wondering.
Why? Why do you wonder that?
No one knows.
Well, if he never got married again.
Again.
Maybe she ruined him for other women.
Or maybe he was gay.
That's what I'm saying. Well, you couldn't be a guy just coming out as gay back in Hollywood back then.
Right.
That's true. But he was a cinematographer, and I think the studios were much more forgiving of people who were behind the scenes.
Right, undercover.
Well, that's probably true.
Well, so Jean threw herself into her work and maintained a hectic schedule of acting and making public appearances all over the country. She was America's new pinup girl known as the Blonde Bombshell. She always appeared to the outside world as happy and successful, but in her private moments, she feared she would give in to despair. She was a drinker, and on several occasions was seen drunk in public.
Hmm.
Oh, scandal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She was often sick, both physically and emotionally.
Drunk in public. You'd never be able to be a movie star, but would back then, would you, devil?
No.
Of course, no. People seeing you sober in public would cause a scandal. That would be the key, you showing up sober, because then people would know something was different.
Yeah,
but if you were drunk all the time like you normally are, they would just think that's your normal personality.
But what I love is that the people that listen to this podcast understand that I work with you and Tim. And so. Mm-hmm.
And this is why she.
Yes. Cares. And so my excessive alcoholism is just a coping mechanism for working with you two dipshits. Not just
this
episode is full of healthy choices.
I am a teetotaler, devil.
I know.
I do not let the devil juice cross my lips.
Your lips are another podcast.
Now, Nina, two things. You were blonde at one time, weren't you?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Blonde-ish. Did people call you the blondish bombshell?
No, I would have punched them.
You would have punched them. Now, see, that's not a polite way of approaching
Nina
a man.
Makes healthy choices.
I do. I make healthy choices, including letting out my big feelings.
And you, I do know that you like dark liquor.
I do.
So I do have a question for you. Ugh. Have you ever had Old Granddad?
I believe I have.
It's a bourbon. When I used to drink, I used to drink Old Granddad. It's the finest bourbon you will ever have.
For $3.
No, it's not cheap. It's not cheap. My brother got me drinking it. My brother was a bad influence. He was like Jean Harlow's mom.
Wow.
But the next time you get it, just order a shot of Old Granddad. It's got a really nice vanilla kind of taste aftertaste when you drink it.
Yeah, nice finish.
Yeah.
So, I'll put it on the list.
Perfect.
On the list. It's a long list, but go ahead.
It is.
So Jean often complained that the house she shared with Paul Byrne now seemed creepy to her. Yeah. She felt Paul's presence anytime she was alone in the mansion.
Aww.
I know, that's kind of sad.
Maybe she
really loved him.
Maybe.
By the midnight.
You know, it's a hard thing. This is a terrible story. I don't want to get us off track, but a friend of mine.
Okay, good.
Friend of mine, he went into his bedroom. No, he went into his bedroom
you
one
have no
time.
Friends.
And he shot himself while his family was at the dinner table.
This is a sucky story.
Well, no, I'm just saying the wife, his wife, could never enter that house again. The police came, the paramedics came. She never entered that house again. Never.
I don't blame her.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm just saying it's a traumatic thing. So for her to live there had to be fairly difficult.
Yeah, and especially living there alone.
Yeah.
All right. Perfect.
So don't do it in your house. Go to the woods or something. It ruins it for everybody.
By the mid-1930s, Jean Harlow was one of the biggest stars in the United States. And it was hoped MGM's next Greta Garbo. Still young, her star continued to rise while the popularity of other female stars at MGM, such as Garbo and Joan Crawford, waned. Harlow's movies continued to make huge profits at the box office, even during the middle of the Great Depression. After her third marriage ended in 1934, Jean Harlow met William Powell, another MGM star, and quickly fell in love. The couple was reportedly engaged for 2 years, but differences ranging from past marriages to Powell's uncertainty of the future kept them from publicly formalizing their relationship. MGM also liked the box office of the attainable single Jean Harlow. Jean, though, was desperate to start a family. What do you think about that, Chuck?
Well, I think, see, this is a third marriage. I think it probably takes you 3, maybe 4, 5 sometimes to get it right. Yeah, think about this. Think about this, Nina.
Yes.
Marriage is a contract between a man and wife or another man or whoever, right? Between two people. It's the only contract that never expires.
It's true.
Yeah. Don't you think that there should be like a 5-year renewal, like your driver's license? There should be a 5-year renewal on a marriage.
Yeah, but doesn't it expire when one of you dies?
That's the only way.
You're going to have to wait a while.
Yeah, it's like student loans. I mean, that's the only way you can get out of it.
You don't really have to wait.
I'm just saying every 5 years, 6 years maybe, 5, 6, whatever, they should have to be renewed. And you should both have to agree, yeah, let's continue on. Well, and then have a 3-year option. Say, I ain't like a football player. I'm not ready to really sign on for another 6 years. But I'll do 3.
Perfect.
And then you can do it like that. Because that's generally what I say on my anniversary. My gift every year is I'm going to extend your contract 1 more year.
Well,
it's an interesting consideration.
It's something to think about.
It's not. It's not at all.
Well, it's the only thing where you're just signing everything away forever.
Yeah. So Gene's weak.
So
what?
I'm going to interrupt
sure,
you again. I'm
you're
sorry,
fine.
But this is actually to contribute.
Thank you.
She had a thing for older dudes. Paul Byrne, who she was married to, was like 20 years older than her. And then William Powell was similarly a good 20 years older than she was. So she was, Jean, in all of her good choices, was sorting out a lot of daddy issues.
Well, yeah, she wanted to feel protected because clearly nobody was protecting this poor girl.
No.
And older men, generally, especially older men with money, sometimes can give the perception of protection.
Yes.
I like them apples.
Well, being an older man, yeah.
No, we didn't say like dilapidated old man, you.
You know, older. But see, that's, I would just have difficulty with someone 20 years, 25 years younger. That would just seem like that'd be like hanging around with my kids, and they kind of bug me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And they didn't have Viagra back then, so you were under a lot of pressure.
You were under a lot of pressure.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, but
you guys don't know the pressure men live under.
Oh,
you have no idea. It's not easy
especially
being us.
White men. They have it so bad.
It's difficult. Yes. That's what I keep trying to tell everybody. Every internet post, I'm
you
like,
be a
please
class.
Go easy on us. We should be. We really should be, because we're just getting trampled on all the time.
You poor thing. So poor little Jean is desperate to start a family. But her weak constitution and hectic schedule wreaked havoc with her health. And she seemed to always have the flu. And when she bitched about her fever and her body aches and all this, when she bitched about it, it was ignored by her mother and those close to her. The studio actually saw to it that Jean had a relentless schedule to maintain. And her mom, being the ever-loving beacon of hope that she was, told Jean that if she didn't live up to her contractual obligations with MGM, that they would replace her. So Jean maintained her schedule despite being so ill sometimes she could barely stand. And when she was feeling overwhelmed, the studio physician would give her a vitamin C booster and eventually amphetamines. That seems like a natural progression.
Right. She is being so well cared for and so nurtured by everyone around her.
I know.
Her.
I don't know why she'd want older men. In January of 1937, Jean Harlow and Robert Taylor traveled to Washington, D.C. to take part in fundraising activities associated with President Franklin Roosevelt's birthday for the organization later known as the March of Dimes. Her mother, thank the baby Jesus, was on vacation with her husband in Florida.
And you know Jean paid for that vacation.
Oh, please. Of course she did.
Yeah.
The trip was physically taxing for Harlow, and she contracted the flu. She recovered in time to attend the Academy Awards with William Powell. The next day, on May 30th, 1937, William Powell checked on Jean and discovered that her condition had not improved. He contacted her mother and insisted that she cut her holiday short to come be at her daughter's side. Powell, evidently being the only one who's got any fucking sense, also summoned a doctor. On June 2nd, 1937, it was announced that Harlow was again suffering from influenza. Dr. Ernest Fishbaugh, who'd been called to Harlow's home to treat her, diagnosed her with an inflamed gallbladder, which does hurt like a son of a bitch.
Well, oh, I can tell you from personal experience, I have had kidney stones, which has been scientifically proven to be 3.75 times more painful than childbirth.
Oh.
And the gallbladder was even worse than the kidney stone.
I've had all of those things, including giving a birth to a child, and I can tell you to shut the fuck up.
No, my gallbladder, when I had my gallbladder attack, it's the only time that I've been in so much pain that it caused me to actually vomit.
No,
and I've seen some stuff. I've been through some injuries before.
You're a baby.
I'm not a baby. I will tell you this story.
No, don't tell me the story. Let me tell you something. Imagine if I took my fist and stuck it up your urethra. Up your urethra and grabbed a hold of some of your insides. And then just started to pull them out your wiener. Imagine this.
Is it bad? Is it bad that you're giving me a tingly feeling here, devil?
It's pretty gross. And now, if you can imagine
that. We've got
that,
more good choices this episode.
Do I got to pay extra for that?
No. You're nasty. But imagine that, and you still cannot come close to what it feels like. That, and that's if a baby comes out like it's supposed to. That doesn't include if the baby's breech. Or if you have to have it in the back seat of a car because you're snowed in somewhere, or the 1,050 other things that could happen when you're having this baby. So,
look,
shut up. But you can.
I'm just telling you.
Tell me, please tell me about Jean Harlow's death before I have to tell everybody about yours.
Before I do,
no,
I will tell you once, Nina. I was playing in a softball tournament, and it was five games, and we were out of town. And in the first inning of the first game, I had an outfielder collide with me and break three of my ribs.
Oh, God.
It was a five-game tournament, Nina. I went to the hospital after the fifth game. So I
was very manly of you, Chuck.
I am not one who cannot handle pain. But when I had my gallbladder, I truly, when I had the attack, I just thought, if there's a merciful God, he will take me now. But I made it through that, too. So.
It's very inspiring.
Well, it's in the book. So it's in the chapter Playing Through Pain. Because, you know, men, you, just because you get hurt, it doesn't mean, you know, that's got to end. So
right. You got to keep going.
You got to keep going.
Carry on.
You can't just be saying, oh, pull hamstrings. I mean, if you don't. Here, there's a quote directly from the book. If you don't occasionally have to get stitches, you're just not doing it right. So.
Stitches. A cast.
Stitches.
Whatever.
A cast. Yeah. Whatever. Perfect. So anyway, getting back to Jean here. Now, she felt better on June 3rd because as gallbladder attacks are wont to do, they do pass. And coworkers expected her back on the set by Monday. Now, press reports were contradictory with headlines reading Jean Harlow seriously ill and Harlow recovering from serious illness. Now, Clark Gable, who had...
they were friends. Don't
who visited Harlow. Yeah. Yeah, but you know what?
What if you tell me he has halitosis, I will kill you.
He had dentures and it was supposed to be...
Oh,
he didn't
God.
Clean them good.
Okay.
Yeah, it was supposed to be very bad.
All right.
Yeah, I don't want him to talk smack about Gable either.
I'm just saying.
Keep it moving.
Yeah. He later remarked that she was severely bloated and that he smelled urine on her breath when he kissed her. Now, these are both signs of kidney failure. So if you ever you ever kiss somebody and you get a whiff of urine, get them to the doctor.
Well, yes.
Now, Jean Harlow, quit kissing them, yeah. Now, she just... had days to live. Well, this is not going to be a happy ending.
Really?
No.
Dr. Leland Chapman, a colleague of Fishbaugh, was called to give a second opinion on Harlow's condition. He recognized that she was not suffering from an inflamed gallbladder at all, but was in the final stages of kidney failure. Much like my dear old Grandpa Flanagan. They thought he had the flu and said, keep giving him more fluids and more fluids. And he was in kidney failure. And he died.
Dialysis was not a thing.
Yeah.
No, 38 years old when the man died. 38 years Jesus. Old. On June 6, 1937, Jean said that she could not see Powell clearly and could not tell how many fingers he was holding up. Now, that evening, she was taken to Good Samaritan Hospital in Los Angeles, where she slipped into a coma. And the next day, June 7, 1937, at 11:37 a.m., Jean Harlow died in the hospital, and she was only 26 years old. Now, if the doctor's press releases, the cause of death given was a cerebral edema. Now, that's a complication of kidney failure. It's believed that the scarlet fever she had suffered as a child may have caused chronic hypertension, eventually leading to kidney failure. You would have thought they would have picked that up with all the doctors they checked on.
Yeah, but they didn't know what the fuck they were doing in the 30s.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's not like they file shared or said, hey, this is her. This is what we've looked at before. Everybody just kind of was running on their own stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, back then, even then, they had the blood pressure monitors. They look and it's like, oh, it's 210 over 110. Maybe we ought to do. But I don't know if they have blood pressure medicine.
But if a doctor's being paid by the studio and being told she needs to be back on set.
Yeah, she's fine.
Yeah.
It's just a flesh wound.
Yeah.
So.
Poor girl.
Now, for years following her death, rumors circulate that Jean's mother had refused to call a doctor because she was a Christian Scientist, or that Harlow had declined hospital treatment or surgery. None of these are true.
Well, then why Timmy put him in there?
Well,
Well, no, it is a big, it was a big rumor that her mom declined all medical help for Jean when she was desperately ill because she was trying to minimize her illness, or she was a Christ Scientist or something along those lines. So it's one of those things, yeah, that if you've heard about Jean Harlow, you may have heard these rumors.
Well, but the thing is, I guess, is that she's an older, you know, she's 26. I mean, I don't know how her mother can refuse to do anything. You know what
I mean?
Well,
if you're in a coma.
Well, I mean, if you're in a coma.
She was so desperately ill.
Yeah. I mean, you got to have somebody around besides her mother. And wasn't her mother in Florida?
Yeah, she got. I don't know if they called her home, but I don't know if she got back in time.
Okay, just wondering.
There's a big gap in that information there. Now
the Florida trip was in January.
Oh, okay. Now her grayish complexion, recurring illnesses, and severe sunburn are all signs of kidney disease. She had care, they just did not diagnose her quickly enough. And even if they had, chances are she would still have died, as treatment options were pretty limited at the time. They just had, I think they had leeches and stuff back then. Leeches and cocaine and opium. That's pretty much your choices, right, back then.
Amphetamines.
Amphetamines, yeah. Yeah, amphetamines, I can't think they're good for your renal system.
No, probably not.
Renal being associated with your kidneys. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to use a medical term that you might not know.
This is what we're going to do.
Jean Harlow was buried at Forest Lawn Memorial Park in Glendale in a great mausoleum in a private room of multicolored marble, which William Powell bought for $25,000. The inscription on the tomb reads simply, "Our baby." She couldn't even escape that in death. Now, for years, the home owned by Jean and her second husband, Paul Byrne, has reported to be haunted. An image of a woman and man playing cards has been reported in the kitchen. A woman in a glamorous nightgown has been seen walking up the long staircase to the second floor. See, I've had dreams like that before, so maybe it's haunted, maybe it's not. And never turning around when called out to. And a man has been heard crying in the bedroom where Paul Byrne killed himself. See, I thought when we were going to... Who was the one that was in a real bad car wreck back then?
Thelma Todd?
No.
No.
It's Mariska Hargitay's mom.
Jane Mansfield.
Yes.
Jane Mansfield, yeah. Yeah, because there was always, I don't believe this was true, but they said that she was decapitated, but I don't believe she was decapitated at the scene.
She was not.
Yeah.
Her wig flew off.
Her wig flew off, yeah. But they always said she was decapitated, but.
Happens to me walking up the road.
And I'm pretty. Your wig flies off.
Right off. All the time.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. She was, at the time, I guess she was filming a movie with Clark Gable, Saratoga.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she died, they were in the middle of that, so they had to do, like, long shots with a stand-in to, like,
they finished
the movie. And it was a huge film. People went, record numbers of people went to go see that. So, I guess they did a good job with it. I don't know if that was my...
Well, at least she went quick. Better than kidney disease. That'd be a terrible thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it would.
Well, it's really sad that she had all this money and all this success, but she wasn't happy and she died so young. It's like,
well,
it seems that so unfair that she had access to all, you know, all of these good things and just did not have a happy life.
Well, I think she didn't have anybody that took care of her. She didn't have anybody that she could go to that she could trust.
Right.
You know, it's funny though, you say she died young. But think back to the times. Her mom was only 34, and they told her she was too old to be an actress.
Yeah.
So she was 26. She was about possibly reaching the end of her run, because there was always somebody new coming in. Now 34 is just a baby. I mean, that's
right.
Not.
Well,
26. That's 26. You wouldn't even get a big part till you're 26, 27 years old now.
Right, you're just coming into it.
Yeah.
So that's Jean Harlow.
Yay.
That is.
There are no dead kids.
Yay. Not one. She was 26.
Yay.
Yeah. Well, and just for the record, I'm not good, Devil.
Nobody still cares. There's a reason we didn't ask.
Yeah, nobody asked me today, so I'm just telling you I'm not good.
Nobody. We know.
My rheumatism has been flaring up. I had a stiff neck for the last week. So.
Is that a euphemism?
No. Unfortunately, it's not.
I think I need...
Or fortunately, yes. It's not.
I think I need to get one of those My Pillow things. Because I'm waking up in the morning, my neck's no good.
Don't buy one of those. The guy that owns it's terrible. He's a terrible person.
Well, if it makes my neck feel better, I don't care if it's Stalin I'm buying the damn thing from.
No, go to Kohl's. They're having a big sale on pillows.
I'm not going to Kohl's.
I'm sure your wife has Kohl's cash.
She does. You know, we went there one time and I bought a watch and it was, you know, some $200 or something, and it was like $213 or $14, so we got, you know, 4 Kohl's cash things. Then she bought other stuff and had to go to another register because you had to pay for it at the jewelry counter. And she felt like she had gotten cheated out of $10 in Kohl's cash, because if you added up the extra $13 or $22 from my thing, an extra $26 and $28 from her thing, she should have got an extra $10 in Kohl's cash. So we spent a half an hour at the customer service desk explaining why she should have got, and I offered her $20 just to leave the damn place.
It was the principle of the thing.
See, it is. People go you wouldn't know crazy what about those Kohl's cash.
You don't understand principles.
Well, I just know I was tired, and I just wanted to go look at my watch.
You're a kid. You're a child. You were tired. Well, you wanted to go home.
I couldn't take my watch out of the box and put it on until we got out of Kohl's.
One, go home. So. Oh. All right.
Well, Nina, thank you so much for filling in for Timmy. You know, this has been a much more pleasant experience. And have you noticed, Devil, we haven't really been at each other's throat this whole thing.
Timmy pits us against each other.
I think he does.
Yeah.
I think it's
Would
Timmy's.
Tim do that?
It's his way of staying in power, Nina. Divide and conquer.
Oh. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, Tim's
manipulation.
It is.
It's very shifty.
Tim's a tyrant.
So shifty.
He is shifty. And he's tyrannical. He's really, just a horrible person in general.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say?
I would. I would say that.
Yeah.
So,
poor Timmy.
Well, we want to thank you. When will we see again your, Don't Talk to Strangers will be making its second season appearance?
Yes, like the week of December 10th. It's going to be a very short season. I think there's 3 episodes, so that's going to all come out in December. And then I'm doing a serial killer episode of Don't Talk to Strangers. I'm not a big serial killer person, but this one's super interesting, and that'll be out on the 15th.
Perfect.
And are we going to have a teaser as to...
It is the Sunday morning slasher, Coral Watts.
Oh, the Sunday morning slasher.
Yes, he is the only known serial killer. He was known to be a serial killer, and they paroled him.
No kidding.
Yep, I shit you not.
That figures.
And did he do anything crazy after they paroled him? Or do we have to listen and find out?
You have to listen and find out, but he was closely monitored after his parole.
I would think so.
Yeah.
I would hope so.
Well, thank you both for
having me. Well, thank you.
I appreciate it. And the cops are here.
Yeah, you got to run out the back door now. All right.
Yep, out the window.
Thank you, Nina.
We want to thank everyone. We want to thank all of our listeners, our Patreon sponsors, and all of our listeners. You know, we just had Thanksgiving, so... We want to express how thankful we are for each and every one of you for letting us into your lives for an hour and a half every other week.
Yeah.
So thank you so much. And we will see you next time, I guess, on History Dweebs. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.